Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Discover how you can take charge of the all-new Corsa E on opel.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
I don't think we were expecting the response that we're getting to the Irish on the Seesaw app for primary school children, and the fact that it's Donegal Irish and it's in a Donegal accent. We love the Donegal accent here, but people are finding it, the Irish, a little difficult to understand. I wonder, is that common, or are there people out there who are actually enjoying it and can manage very well with it? It's amazing what comes up on the programme and what proves to be controversial. 51551. Now, despite Colm Henry's admission that there can't be a definite plan for the future of the vaccine rollout, Ireland does stand at number two in the EU for the doses administered per 100 people, second only to Denmark. And we're joined by Judy Maltz, who's from Israel, the country operating the most efficient rollout in the world. And we're also going to go to London, London-based journalist Vincent McAvinney on our nearest neighbour in the UK. And in a moment, we'll speak to the former head of the HSE, Tony O'Brien, about what he thinks of the plans here. But first, Vincent, I'll come to you. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
We heard yesterday that vaccines are being rolled out there in the high street, that you'd be able to go to high street pharmacies and pick up your vaccine. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. The first high street stores, Boots and Superdrug, were giving the vaccine yesterday. They're going to roll it out across more of their shops. And Asda, the supermarket, has also been selected as a vaccination centre, and they'll be coming online in the next few days as well.
So how many people have been vaccinated in the UK at this stage?
The latest figure that we have last night is that 2.9 million people have now been vaccinated. That was up 300,000 on the previous day. The government has set a target of 15 million people by mid-February, so they're going to have to increase that rate somewhat. But it does look like they are managing to really ramp up the vaccine rollout here.
And the vaccines that they're using currently, they're the Pfizer vaccine, the one we have here, and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yes, that's right. Those two vaccines, the Oxford AstraZeneca one, of course, much easier because it doesn't need those incredibly cold temperatures to be refrigerated. So they are finding that that one is the one that they are starting to use much more. And the Moderna vaccine has also been approved for use here, but we're still waiting for the first shots of those to go in.
And have there been any teething problems that have become commonplace now in the UK system?
There are some teething problems. So there are issues in terms of distribution when it comes to getting it out to centres across the UK. It is quite easy to get the vaccine. You simply either can call and arrange it at a local GP surgery. There are thousands of them issuing it. Or you can go to a local hospital or a vaccination centre like a Nightingale Hospital. So there are lots of centres. The supply, there has been some issues. And Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, was calling for a greater supply to London. We've heard the same from the Welsh government, the Scottish government, saying that they're not getting enough. But in terms of people actually going to get it, there is a problem which is highlighted this morning, is that there's still a persistence of fake news, and particularly in the UK's South Asian community. So the NHS is having to translate a lot of the information that they're putting out to combat the disinformation into other languages, because there are cultural reasons, rumours being spread that there is alcohol in it, for instance, or banned meat products under certain religions. And so that is another part of the battle that the NHS is waging.
Okay, but overall, it's more that people are wondering where their vaccine is as opposed to there being vaccine hesitancy.
Yes, that's right. The UK government has been pretty strong on fighting the sort of disinformation. They've put real pressure on social media companies, and there has been some taking down of content. They've also been carefully managing. Each few days, we get someone in, at the moment, the key demographics, obviously those who are 80 and above at the moment. So we've had news of the likes of Sir David Attenborough getting the vaccine, and then a few days later, we understand that the Queen gets the vaccine. So they're using this constant campaigning to try to encourage people along, to try and stop that hesitancy.
And how does it work then? Are the people being contacted to come for their vaccination, or do you have to register for an appointment?
So people have been contacted. So GP surgeries have been sending out to their patient lists. They can identify those who are in the categories that are being vaccinated at the moment because of age or infirmity. So they have been contacting them. But also you yourself, if you think you're in that category, can contact the services online or by phone, or family members can do so on your behalf, and it can be arranged. So there doesn't seem to be a problem so much with arranging these appointments. It's more making sure the supply is there. And then there are questions from people sort of younger in the other categories waiting for the vaccine, wondering really when they will start to come online for this. There's been a lot of talk about having 24/7 centres so that possibly younger people could go in overnight and get it done. There is sort of a mooted line from the government. The Prime Minister, after his minister said they weren't looking at that, the Prime Minister then came out and said, actually, we are going to get this on board. So lots of young people saying, well, I don't mind getting up at 2, 3am, going and getting the vaccine if it speeds up the rollout.
Vincent, thank you very much for bringing us up to speed on how it's working there in the UK. Vincent McAvinney in London. And now we go to Israel and to Judy Maltz, who's a journalist there. Judy, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. The vaccine rollout is being called the best in the world where you are, Operation Back to Life. How many people have received the vaccine so far?
As of yesterday, more than 2 million. We're talking about 25% of the population above the age of 16, because we're not giving the vaccine to anyone under 16, and about 75% of the population of 60 and over.
Okay, and people point to those figures and say that they're quite extraordinary and they wonder why they can't be replicated here and in other countries. But Israel is, it said, paying much more than other countries for the vaccine, and also it has agreed with the vaccine company that it will become almost like a giant pilot scheme.
Yes, well, nobody really knows how much Israel paid. There's all sorts of rumors. Recently, it emerged that maybe we overpaid just a little bit, but it was worth it because the alternative price of these lockdowns and testing for coronavirus for everyone was much greater. And yes, that is correct. We were able to swing a deal with Pfizer that we would get millions upon millions of vaccines delivered this week, last week, next week. And in exchange, Pfizer would receive some figures, data on how it is working out here. In effect, Israel is kind of becoming a lab for Pfizer. Okay. And the reason Israel was chosen is it's a very small country, and we have a very centralized healthcare system and also very digitized. So it is very easy to roll something like this out, to vaccinate the population and to accumulate all the necessary data.
Has there been any pushback against that, that, you know, Israel is being used as a lab for Pfizer and that people's medical information is being given back to the drug company?
Initially there was, yes, but we've been reassured that there would be no names or no personal information supplied, just overall trends and figures without naming anybody. And I think here most people would even have been willing to sacrifice a little bit of their own personal information in exchange for getting these vaccines. People just so badly want to get out of this lockdown.
Now, another point of controversy, of course, is that Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza, they don't have access to a vaccine yet. And there has been some strong criticism of Israel in that regard.
Yes, there has been. We are really, in a sense, there are many Palestinians from the West Bank who come into Israel every single day and go back. So in a sense, it's one economy and one big space. That the same does not hold true for Gaza, where there really are very few people who come in and out every day. And you will find legal scholars who will tell you that this is a violation of Israel's obligations as an occupying force. And you will find others who will say that legally Israel is not bound to supply the Palestinians in the West Bank with vaccinations because of the Oslo Accords, which essentially set up a different sort of regime that does not require Israel to do so, although many people will say that morally, if not legally, Israel is obliged to provide the Palestinians with vaccinations. Now, the Palestinians themselves have a contract with the producers of the Russian Sputnik vaccine, and also the World Health Organization has said it will be supplying, and Israel has said that once it has vaccinated its entire population, it would be happy to hand over any surpluses to the Palestinians and other neighboring countries.
Because we know that Amnesty International has condemned Israel over that decision only to give the leftover vaccines to the Palestinian people. I mean, is there a sense that because this is a global emergency, that this is a pandemic, that a different course of action would have been the right one for Israel to take when it comes to sharing the vaccine with the Palestinian people?
Oh, yes, for sure. And you will find many Israeli human rights organizations who are urging the government to do just that. But right now, it is not.
As I said to you at the start, we have lots of people lauding the Israeli vaccination program as being the best in the world. But you still have a COVID-19 spike there, don't you?
Right. So the vaccination program is the good news. The bad news is that we are right now in our third lockdown, which started on Sunday. And in recent days, we've had more than 9,000 new cases a day, which is a new peak for us. And that has to do with the total mismanagement of this health crisis by our government here. Its inability to enforce previous lockdowns, it's succumbing to various interest groups or communities. I'll give you an example, the ultra-Orthodox community, which also has its own political parties, without which our Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, does not have a government. And there has been widespread flouting of the rules in this community, and very little has been done about it. And that's why we basically ended up in this third lockdown right now.
Along with what you say, is there a sense that people have relaxed because the vaccination program has been so successful?
Well, that's an interesting question. I live in an apartment building on a very high floor, so I get to see the traffic outside on Israel's main highway. The first few days, you could tell there was a lockdown because there was not the usual bumper-to-bumper traffic at peak hours of the day. Just yesterday, I noticed things had changed, and I think maybe that does have to do with the sense that, okay, more and more. This week, in fact, we started the second dose of the vaccine, and many people already have the second dose. So there is something to that people are feeling a little bit more secure that they can go out, and that might explain why the roads look busier yesterday and today.
And the ultra-Orthodox community that you mentioned there, is there vaccine hesitancy there as well, or are they quite prepared to be inoculated?
Actually, there is vaccine hesitancy, and it's quite interesting because the other community where there has been a rather widespread flouting of the rules is the Arab community in Israel. And also there, and I'm not sure what the connection is, but also there we see that there is greater hesitancy to get vaccinated. If among non-Orthodox and non-Arab Israelis, the rate has been about 75%. In those two communities, it's less than 50%. So there is some, it could be fake news or a certain religious beliefs, but there's quite a gap between the willingness in those communities and outside them.
Judy, thanks very much for telling us about it today. Judy Maltz there in Israel. And after the break, we'll be speaking to Tony O'Brien, of course, former head of the HSE, and we'll be getting his take on how the vaccine rollout is being done here and what's likely to happen when inoculations in the community start to happen.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.